CliffCentral.com. Yeah, good morning. Brand new week for many people. The first working week of the year. Well, good bad news for you if you are only starting today. Some people have been at work already for a week. So, yeah, you got to get your act together.
You do.
There are still some, believe it or not, who are coming back next week.
So that's what?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Listen. I mean, we sound jealous. Maybe we are.
Yeah. And I reserve the right.
Yeah, of course. But, yeah... The 20th of January, seriously?
No, that's a piss take.
You can't do that. That's just not on. Anyway, I hope everything's off to a good start for you this morning. Lots of traffic back on the roads. That's for sure. It's we're definitely back in the normal swing of things in terms of cars on the road, and it hasn't been this way for almost a month. And I just want to look ahead at the year quickly, because we don't do this. We kind of stumble into everything.
Okay.
But looking at... April and May, there are a couple of days where if you take like 3 or 4 days, you end up with like 20 because of all the holidays and the weekends, and you know how it goes.
Yeah.
So somewhere from, I don't want to get this wrong, Good Friday is like the 10th of April, and then the Monday after that is a holiday. So if you take off the 4 days that remain of that next week,
yeah,
you could basically... I can't remember exactly how it works, but you more or less end up with the whole month of April if you take a few days here and there. It's just unreal. Like, that month is another write-off. So we've got really just January, February, March, right?
Yeah.
Then you've got April, which is a write-off. So that's another, like, mini-December.
Mm.
Then you've got May, June, July. August, there's also that Women's Day weekend thing that happens. And then really it's kind of downhill to the rest of this year. So you've got to look ahead and plan this properly. And I'm not planning any major trips anywhere this year. I've decided I'm mostly keeping it quiet. And that I look forward to that.
Mm.
I want to be traveling around. I did a lot of that last year and it was great. I'm not in a hurry to be hopping in the sky and flying around. You know, getting into the airports, queues, people, blah, blah, blah. I don't need that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't, you know, nobody loves that.
No.
I also think it depends on the type of person you are. You know, you might want to have those 20-odd days off, but I just realized something about myself, and it sounds like, I know people might have the inclination to punch me in the throat for admitting something like this,
uh-oh,
but I actually don't like taking time off.
Yeah, you want to feel
like...
I know what you mean. It sounds really bizarre, but you probably want to do things.
Mm.
Like you don't like sitting around doing nothing. I can't do that for long. If I go on holiday, even if I'm preparing to do nothing, after 2 days of doing nothing, in inverted commas, you know, like lounging around, watching series, not getting dressed.
Yeah.
I start, like, even after a day, I'd say.
Drives me crazy.
Lose your mind.
And I know, maybe it's because we genuinely love the work that we do, so yeah, that's why
could,
it doesn't feel
that
like
could be part
back-breaking
of it.
Work.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe if you have targets at work and a manager who's always on your back and you're trying to make sure that the debit column matches the credit.
Yeah.
That's the most that I know about accounting. You might really want to, you know, be itching for some time off. But, you know, I just, weekends are good. If I just monitor my time properly, weekends are good and I'm energized enough.
Yeah, it's enough for me too. I had a great weekend. Friday and Saturday were terrific. I woke up yesterday morning though with, I was walking around like a question mark. My back is not working properly. Wasn't yesterday. I feel a bit better today, but I'm still not 100%. Like, I walked in here like I was 87 years old. Very slowly. I'm definitely not going to be able to do any physical exercise today. But we'll see. Maybe I have to go and actually get someone who knows what this stuff is to take a look.
And you have no idea what you did to your back?
Zero. Like, there is nothing. I did no physically demanding. I didn't pick up anything heavy. I wasn't, like, partying hard. It was actually such a chilled weekend from that point of view. So there's no reason I should have woken up on Sunday with... I promise you, I could not. Like, you know where you have to hold on to things the whole time?
Oh, my goodness.
Feels like you might just... At one point, I had this fantasy, not a great fantasy, but a fantasy of if I bent over and I tried to touch my toes, my back would snap and I would actually fold into myself. Yeah, that's what it felt like. It was bizarre.
Do you know what you sound like? You were pregnant.
Yeah, it sounds like I was pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
please speak about pregnancy, like Mbulelo. Do you have experience like in that?
But that's what Gareth sounds like. Like a lady who got someone left her at the altar and she's pregnant and all alone in her dark house.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Mrs. Havisham.
No, I don't know what that means.
That's what he sounds like. It sounds like somebody.
I felt like I was going to break in half. My spine did not work properly yesterday for whatever reason. So I spent the whole day yesterday just moving around very slowly and feeling sorry for myself. Not great.
Oh, no. Well, on talking about how I just need a weekend and I'm re-energized enough, I got stuck on watching random TV this weekend and I found what I now know for sure is my new obsession. It's a TV show on Discovery.
Yeah.
It's called I Was Prey.
So like as in bears and...
Yes.
Lion.
Oh, something was trying to eat you.
Goodness. It's
imagine the audition process for that show.
It's probably a pity party with everyone coming in with all of their bizarre stories.
People without legs and without arms.
Without half a face.
But it's like two people each episode. I don't know where I've been and didn't know about the show. But then people will talk about what happened to them and how they nearly like died because of just animals attacking them. And I just think it's nature taking its course. There's someone who just happened to be camping. Mind you, you're camping alone. And I think that's where the first issue lied. The other guy was just randomly fishing at a dam, but there was an alligator. And I cringe very easily. And I didn't think I'd like this, but probably three episodes in, I'm like, what? And an alligator did what to your arm? It is so good.
Now, people don't realize that it's obviously all American, right?
Mm.
You don't realize how treacherous the wild in America can be.
Dude.
We think like, oh, yeah, they're complaining about bears, but we've got lions. Our lions are pretty much contained. Mm. Their wild is really roaming.
Yeah, it's all over. And people live because they don't have big walls and fences like we do in, you know, most parts of the country. And I mean, obviously on farms, they've even got fences to keep the livestock in. And we don't have... We may have at one point in our history had like roaming lions in parts of South Africa where humans lived. Now they're mostly confined to national parks.
Mm.
In America, people live, they build their house on the edge of the forest and forest animals come into their houses into their gardens.
Their yards.
Listen, so
that show will humble you.
I went skiing. I've been skiing in the big American resorts.
Because we know you like to boast about that.
No, I want to tell you how this nature thing's very real. So in the summer,
Gareth.
But I'm an elitist and I am better than you. If you haven't been snowboarding, it's not my problem.
As you were, Mbulelo.
So like bears are a big thing, right? So you'd hear often, oh yeah, so and so got taken last summer by a bear.
Mm.
Like just like, you know, how we talk about the common cold here.
I remember Jeff.
Oh yeah.
Jeff was a good guy. I liked Jeff. We visited him. He'd give us some beers and we'd just sit in his yard and on those easy chairs. One day I came over, Jeff weren't there anymore. I asked his wife.
And this is normal.
Wife said, taken by a bear.
You're always taken by something.
Yeah. That's very real. You go to Colorado.
Yeah, we say, oh, shame he was killed by a lion. There you're taken by something.
Yeah, I remember his daughter, Jessie. She was sitting down there one day playing with her toys and a pack of wolves just carried her away.
Taken by wolves. Taken by a gator.
His cousin in Florida. He had a pickup truck and went parked and he was taking a piss next to the lake. Suddenly, out of the blue, alligator came up and four of them just took him down. Never saw him again. Mm. Someone took over the pickup truck. Now they're selling furniture from the back of it. Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
Sums it up.
Imagine.
Once there was this lady, she was actually Jeff's aunt.
Oh, poor Jeff.
She lived in Colorado. Up in the mountains. Well, she was just planting flowers in her garden one day, and a condor came and just picked her up and fed her to his chicks, yeah.
Oh, I like it when the animals win, though.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. So I had a party to go to on Saturday evening, and people now start these WhatsApp groups.
Just for the party.
Just for the party. So everybody's on the... And everybody's... There's always like a whole lot of build-up to it. And, you know, this one's joking. That one's not going to pitch. And then this one's too excitable. And then there's all these, like, gifts being sent. And it's really funny. And then the one girl gets on there. She goes, hey, guys. Like, an hour to go until everyone's meant to be at the party.
Mm.
Hey, guys, I can't make it. I've got the shits. Like, she didn't go, I'm not feeling well.
Oh, no.
She sends us like a picture of all the medicine that she's on.
Mm-mm.
I promise you, like Leanne would know what all this stuff is. Let me show you.
Yeah, Leanne would probably.
No, it's hilarious.
Like, everybody at the party needs to know she's got the shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was so unnecessary.
How uncouth.
So unnecessary. I mean, just I know, it's you don't need to tell people that stuff, right?
How times have changed. Jesus. Since Downton Abbey.
I know. We're terribly sorry, but we're indisposed and shan't be able to join you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Rehydrate. There's Adcocyclazine, there's mm-hmm. Interflora, Pectrolite.
Oh yeah, she's having a tough time.
Yeah, Pectrolite's gonna plug her up real good.
And this is the exact message. Guys, I've just woken up. I have the shits and won't be able to make it today. Was really hoping I'd be better. Have fun. I mean,
yeah.
Keep your incontinence to yourself.
But really, to have and a girl. I mean, like if a guy did that, you'd be like, oh, that's dumbass.
Yeah. You don't want to imagine a girl splattering the bowl.
Oh,
oh no, don't use that term.
Because that doesn't happen to us.
I know this is a double standard, but I can't imagine any woman doing that. And I don't want to. I'm fine with my brain being programmed with a spy.
So what,
we just
pee gently through our asshole?
No, you don't either. You tinkle. You go and powder your nose, and somehow something happens, but I don't want to know.
I'm going to take a picture of the loo one day after I've had a good inning.
Oh, that actually reminds you of being at home over December. So I don't know where this bizarre trend my sisters have now adopted has come from, but thinking about it, it's just my dad and I who are the only guys in the family. And now, with me being out of the house and my parents have one of the bedrooms downstairs and the rest of my siblings
in the mansion, one of the bedrooms downstairs.
Goodbye. So all of the kids have their rooms upstairs. My sisters now have this thing of peeing with the door open. Because, like, just the girls, and then it's the kids, and, like...
Oh, no, you can't do that.
They just pee with the door open.
You don't pee when... No.
Like, is this a normal thing?
No. A friend of mine from Durban was staying, and she stayed at my house, and I normally don't like it when people stay. And even... Like, she's lovely, and it was great that she stayed, so I didn't have a problem with it. But it makes you more aware, like, if you're in a house with other people, you cannot just... with the door open and shit anymore, you know?
It is weird.
That's savagery. It's not weird, it's savage.
Unless you're a complete monster, because for a guy to walk in on a girl peeing, you know, you're in that position. It's a very intimidating and vulnerable... You're prone. That's the actual term for the position, the posture you're in. Prone.
Yes. That's the name of it.
And if someone walks in, you can't really do anything. Like, it's my worst fear that I'll be taking a shit one day and someone will burst through the door like Kramer from Seinfeld.
Yeah, I've been in a couple of public loo situations where the door doesn't lock or something.
Oh, no.
And you sit prone, but you extend your left arm and just kind of put an imaginary force against the door, waiting for someone to open it. But my domestic worker uses our loo with the door open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
I was trying to justify it. I'm like, do they live on their own to the point where...
But so do I.
That's how they're so comfortable. But I don't do that either. You know, they now, if one is like peeing, the other can gladly go into the bathroom and grab something or finish brushing their teeth. And I just think it's like, no. When you're in the loo, you're in the loo on your own. Mm. No one else needs to see or know what's happening.
Has somebody told them that that's not okay? Maybe
I
that's,
did.
Maybe that's why
several
they're still
times
single.
Over.
Yeah, maybe that's why they're still single. I know.
Well,
close the door when you pee for crying out loud. Like, what are we living in here?
Firstly, that's a generalization.
Oh, well.
My sisters are in happy relationships.
Oh, okay. Well, their husbands need some training then.
A few things happened over the weekend, and we can get into some news in a minute or two. But apparently, Donald Trump tweeted in Farsi. He told the Iranian people that he's on their side and that the regime should not kill any of the protesters because the world is watching and America won't tolerate it. I think that's great. And he did it in Farsi.
Well, obviously, somebody did it for him.
Sure, but it's the most liked Persian tweet in the history of Twitter, which is really going to piss the Ayatollah off.
Will he put that world record
up on his
plaque on his wall?
Of course he will. I have the most famous tweet in all of Persian history on Twitter. I'm the most great Persian tweeter. Of course he is. It's just great. I love it. This guy, he's doing so well, and he's winning everywhere, and it's just pissing off. There's this thing that they call Trump derangement syndrome, and I've now gone fully
TDS.
I've just gone fully Donald Trump with friends of mine who are Democrats, because I just can't tolerate this madness anymore, that everything he does is wrong, and that everything that anyone else does that isn't Trump is right. And now I just do it to piss them off, because I actually don't really care. And you know, I've always been critical of Trump. I've been critical of him since the beginning. I couldn't believe that he was a serious candidate when he entered. I did say he would win, but I thought that was because America's a crazy place, right? And it is. But now I actively just try to, because it drives people crazy. They lose their minds around Donald Trump. So now, when I can bring him up with people who I know are leftists, or they're in the Democratic Party, or they support like Nancy Pelosi or Hillary Clinton, or they thought Barack Obama was the best president ever, those people, I go out of my way to make them crazy. And I tell them all the things that Trump has done that's great. And then I say to them, and how has he broken the law? How has he done something wrong? Why should he be impeached? And because there's no reason. If there was a reason, the Democrats would have put it into the bill of impeachment, which they're still dilly-dallying over. They haven't given it to the Senate because there's nothing in it. The Senate will take one look at this and go, thank you. Thank you for wasting the American taxpayer and public's time. Thank you for creating a media storm about nothing. And nothing's going to happen. But I saw something really interesting over the weekend. They're trying to blame him. Now, you know Iran shot down that Ukrainian plane.
Mm.
Remember we came in the
human
one morning.
Error.
Yeah, we said, oh, hell, we don't know how this happened, but something stupid happened, obviously. Because Iran's just a stupid country that doesn't know how to run itself. They shot down a plane that had just taken off. It had been in the air for 2 minutes from Tehran airport. So it took off from their own airport. Ukrainian plane, nothing to do with anything. Remember, America's not firing ordnance into Iran.
Mm.
Not a single piece of U.S. military weaponry was fired or aimed at Iran at the time. Could not possibly be America's fault. People are trying to blame Trump for this. They're like, well, if he hadn't taken out Soleimani, they wouldn't have shot down that plane. Somehow now, there's no responsibility for Iran in all of this. There are people who are prepared to go that far. Like, it's definitely Donald Trump's fault that plane went down. Unbelievable.
Ugh.
It's like me blaming Sia if Leanne is on her way home and she drives over some homeless person's foot. And I blame Sia because he made Leanne cross before she left the show this morning.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Wasn't his foot, but his arm.
Yeah, sorry.
So anyway, this is just the kind of crazy nonsense that is going on in the world. And I'm just loving pissing people off who cannot take how well America is doing right now under Donald Trump. Because they hate Donald Trump, which is fine. I understand that. He's not a likable guy. He's got a horrible personality. He's an egomaniac. He's full of the most intense ego and bravado and braggadocio you've ever seen in a single human being. But he's better than every president that these guys who hate him have liked before. And there's no logic. So it's just great to piss those people off. And I had a couple of discussions over the weekend that I had the opportunity to inflame and upset and make cry and make miserable a bunch of people who just don't get it. They're just not paying attention to world affairs, or the only thing they're paying attention to is like CNN. Anyway, I got this email from Anonymous. Hey, Gareth, I listened to your Friday podcast. I want to give you some feedback about the whole working situation at Facebook.
So that was about the fact that Facebook has now implemented these serious, strict rules at work.
They monitor everything you do. Facebook is like the Soviet Union.
You've got to log your loo time and all of that.
Yeah, they keep an eye on you no matter what you're doing or where you are. So this guy works at Facebook in Dublin. And
he can, or girl,
we don't know, it's anonymous. I can verify that everything you said is true. It has been rolled out among all the contracted teams at Facebook in Dublin and in Bangalore. You need to log everything you do, from going to the toilet to asking your boss or colleague a question.
Jeez.
Being 1 minute late in arriving or 1 minute late leaving, you can get sacked. This has been a long time coming, and I've got to the point where I don't think I can handle it anymore. Your work is so critically marked that if you have below 98% accuracy rate, you can be disciplined, and if it happens again, you can be let go of. This is majorly stressful and contributes to a huge uneasiness among staff members. Fucking North Korea, I tell you.
Jeez.
Time to look for a new job. Peace and love, Anonymous.
Can you imagine having to perform at 98% all the time, and also having to log when you speak to your colleague?
And for such a shit company. Like, I wouldn't want to work for Facebook. You know, a lot of people think that would be a great thing to be able to put on your CV. I've met people who work for these places. They're not happy people.
Do you think they get paid well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, Mark Hamill from Star Wars.
Luke Skywalker, please. Let's call him by his real name.
Sorry, Luke Skywalker took to Twitter to announce that he'll be deleting his Facebook account.
Oh, wow, good.
Why? In protest of Zuckerberg's decision to allow political advertisements, including lies and propaganda, on the site.
Yes, because let's remember that they tried to, despite all the things that you've heard about, what was that company called? Cambridge Analytica and everything else. The actual problem there was that they were trying to get votes for Hillary, and it failed dismally. Yep. Facebook allowed those Russian bots, a few of them were working for Trump, but a lot more from the Ukraine especially were working for Hillary, and it didn't work. Nothing can help Hillary. She's just an awful human being.
Dumpster fire.
That's exactly right. That's correct. No, it's spot on. Thank you, Mbolelo. That's a very wise contribution from you this morning to start the day so early.
HRC.
By the way, Mbolelo's got some very fun stuff for us in the sport just now that you won't believe. And we're going to play a new game this morning. Well, it's not really a game, but we're going to talk about...
I think it's reserved for Friday.
No, the game is, but what we're going to talk about today is the opposite of what Fikile Mbalula used to call a bunch of losers. We're going to have a bunch of winners.
So
we'll talk about a South African every Monday who's done amazing things. Mm-hmm. Someone who's responsible for some good in the world and who's contributing and making a valuable, productive addition to the universe.
Leanne Moll.
Is that your first nominee?
Yes.
Sure. That's look at that.
Very funny.
I second it and I... What's that? No. I put it forward and I second it.
Yeah, you nominate and you second.
Yeah, thank you. I was like, second and a third. It
trying to work out
right.
What are you even doing?
Sure. I'll go back to my corner now.
Anyway, so if you're watching what's going on in the world of politics, you might have actually seen what's happening in Iran. You think there were a lot of people protesting, or rather mourning at the funeral of Soleimani? Well, look at how many people are protesting the Iranian government right now in Tehran. Mm. Look at the number of those people on the streets, and then compare the comments made by certain commentators on the internet, those genius people who are on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook, who were saying, oh, look, this outpouring of love for Soleimani, he was a great leader in Iran and Trump was wrong to take him out. Look at those people now and see whether they're commenting on the Iranian people who are pulling down posters of Soleimani, protesting in numbers far exceeding the numbers that pitched up at his funeral. But remember, they were forced to come to that at gunpoint. Their shops were forced to be closed. People were forced to go to the streets, and if you didn't, they would come and find you. Now you can see what Iranians really think of their regime. Where are those people who were commenting about Soleimani? No, I hear crickets. That's exactly right, because this is not going to help their argument, so they're just pretending it's not happening.
But it's the whole regime, so now who replaces him?
What do you mean, Soleimani? Mm. Who knows? That's what.
And it's just going to continue.
In a dictatorship, it's just, there's no way that you could figure that out. And I mean, it's run by a theocratic bunch of nutcases who wear enormous turbans on their heads. They can't even fit through some doors.
Okay.
Some of them have been stuck in one room for the whole of their term.
Okay.
Can't even take those turbans off.
That's a tick.
And then we've got to talk about Harry and Meghan, because there's more fallout after the weekend. Oh my God, the Megxit.
I'm so done with it now.
Anthea Gardner's going to join us Monday morning, the usual. So there's lots to look forward to. Are you excited?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, pretty much.
And parents are excited as they count down the seconds until their kids are back at school.
Oh, yes. Now, my sister-in-law yesterday. I know, like, that. I can't wait. But I thought it was Tuesday, and now I found out it's only Wednesday.
Yes.
Anyway. All right, so if you're a parent who's just desperate for your kids to go back to school, then you have our sympathies. All right, apparently, listen to this. The mysterious tale of a German sedan that has been gathering dust at a Gau train station for 2 years could mean a parking bill for its owner, an official in the Department
for
of Sports,
years.
Arts and Culture. Yes, for more than one, what the car is worth. It could cost 73,000 rand and counting to drive the Audi A4 station wagon again, registered to Charles Mabaso, Chief Director of Cultural Development in the department.
Oh, they named and shamed him.
Out of Gautrain's dimly lit Sandton parking garage. With its thick layer of grime, the Audi has become a canvas for passers-by to scrawl their initials. Just why the car apparently was abandoned is not clear, because Mabaso has yet to respond to queries. See...
So he literally just didn't even report it or say, can someone help me out?
And I'm
go and fetch it.
Is anyone surprised, even slightly surprised, that it's a government minister or department boss or a guy in a government department? Anyone?
No.
Anyone surprised that it's not a private citizen? You know why? Because this guy probably doesn't even need this car. He's probably got a better car that he's using at the moment. He's parked that one there. He thought it would be rent-free. He could just park it out of the way. He's probably doing some dodgy dealings with it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because how do you leave a car like you...
2 years.
Left,
are you kidding?
A pair of sunglasses at someone's house.
Now, they always say luxury car, but this thing's only worth 60 grand, depending on the mileage. But the value of an Audi of that model in a year could be about 60,000 rand, according to valuators.
No, plus it's depreciated another 2 years without even being used.
Gautrain spokesperson Kesa G. Nyaja said that, according to the car park records, the Audi has been parked there for 2 years. If a car owner parks but does not use the train service, he or she has to pay a parking fee of 100 rand a day. If the driver does use the train, the fee is 23 rand a day, or nearly 17,000 rand for 2 years. We do not have a prescribed maximum period for a vehicle to be parked at a station, and it is legal and permissible for a passenger to park long term. Ideally, owners would tell station officials if they intended to leave their vehicles for long periods. It's just unbelievable. Apparently, they know of 12 abandoned cars in the 11,000 parking bays serving the 9 stations. Among them is a Jeep Cherokee. So listen, if you're thinking of buying or just stealing, here's some good ones to get. Jeep Cherokee, also in the Sandton parking garage, hasn't moved from its bay in 3 years and could have racked up a fee as high as 110,000 rand.
Oh.
The Jeep is registered to the Audi Center at the East Rand Mall, but when contacted this week, the dealer principal said he knew nothing about it. I didn't know we had lost one of our cars.
Hmm.
It's just unreal.
Like, what do you have to do to get fired these days? Like, you left a job somewhere.
I know.
Yeah, there's working at Facebook and then there's this.
Good question.
So that's from the Times Live. I love stories like that. That's real news work.
This is also very shady to me.
Going into the Gautrain parking garage, finding a car that's abandoned, finding out who owns it, that's some real journalism.
Yeah,
I like that.
So who's this guy that left that Audi? What's his name? Or who?
Mabaso, Charles Mabaso.
Mabaso there. Do you know what we should do? Is let's find out, did he buy that while he spent the taxpayers' money, I would presume?
Maybe, who knows?
Whatever the car cost at that time, you should have to pay it back. Like, this is madness now.
What, to the fiscus?
I don't know. Make him pay back 300,000 rand, because that's probably what the car cost.
Pay back the money.
Back them. No, because it's madness now, Gareth. We can't have our leaders.
And if it's his car, let's say it's his, he paid for it with his own money, the money he earned, still stupid. Like, there's something not right in your head. If you think that it's okay to just leave a... Man, that's like putting waste money. That's like putting this. 60,000 rand in a suitcase and just leaving it at the entrance to a shopping mall.
I'll put it out there. There's a dead body in one of those cars.
Maybe, huh?
Maybe he bought it for
now it's soup in the boot.
Black and grey soup.
Starting to fall through the exhaust pipe.
That's exactly it.
All right, and then in other news, ENCA are reporting that an Eskom substation in Kempton Park caught fire on Sunday morning, resulting in power outages in the area. According to the city of Ekurhuleni, the fire resulted in a loss of power in Aston Manor, Cargo and Spartan substations in Kempton Park. Emergency services said the fire has been contained. We managed to get a specialized tool, of which is a foam that suppresses the fumes from the transformer oil and diesel itself. We managed to extinguish the blaze, he said. 35 firefighters from 8 fire stations were on site to extinguish it. The city said no casualties have been reported and the cause of the fire will be investigated by the team. It's great news for Eskom, who are, of course, having a lovely time at the moment.
Yesterday, because of that transformer that was on fire in the East Rand, OR Tambo ended up being in the dark. And I mean...
Sure.
International travelers arriving to the airport in darkness.
That's really bad.
Once again, it's that feeling of, can't we just keep our own shame to ourselves? Mm-hmm. It's like, can the guests not see this?
Yeah, it's like if there's a big turd in your guest bathroom and you don't know about it, but it's been sitting there since before your guests arrived, and now they're all coming in to use the toilet and they can't believe what a disgraceful human being you are. That's what it is.
I got told
and
by
the way, that turd is called the ANC, who I wish a happy birthday to, for their celebrations in Kimberley.
You see Cyril doing some heavy dancing.
Oh, Jesus. It's like those guys live in a parallel universe and they just don't realize that most of the country don't give a shit. Apparently the lowest crowds, this is according to, of all people.
Sneeze on the truth.
I'm allergic to the ANC at the moment. You know that horrible Carl Niehaus man who has been supporting Jacob Zuma and the state capture people for the longest time? Carl Niehaus has been widely discredited as one of the most dishonest people in South African politics ever.
Wow.
Well, he was the one. Normally I'd take anything he said with a pinch of salt, but he said he was so hurt when he saw how small the crowds were at the ANC's birthday party. So we'll take him at his word because I do believe he was hurt. It's a direct reflection of what people think of the ANC, that they wouldn't even pitch where you could get some free cake and maybe a T-shirt. People
Those
were like,
horrible
actually,
cakes.
Actually, it's not worth it. They carried a cake into this thing on the shoulders of Umkhonto weSizwe soldiers. I say soldiers in inverted commas. They carried it in like a coffin. Now, to me, someone should have just advised them that if you're doing that, what you're really doing is celebrating putting your own party into the grave.
Because
that's what it looks like. You don't really want to carry a cake like a coffin. It gives the wrong kind of message, if you
cake
know what I mean.
Cake and coffin are at the opposite ends of the emotional scale.
Here's an interesting story. This is from the Sunday Times. Apparently, calling in the South African Air Force to teach live streaming lessons to pupils in rural schools and calling truant teachers to order helped KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape recover from matric despair. As a result of these and other interventions, the Eastern Cape, perennially the worst performing province, increased its pass rate by 5.9%. So it turns out, members of the South African Air Force, including engineers, technicians, and aviation experts, spent 2 weeks teaching maths and science to about 400 matrics from the Amajuba district. So now, we are not paying our Air Force to keep us safe or to maintain aircraft or to do anything that an Air Force is there to do. We're paying them to guest lecture matrix. And this is somehow worthy of celebration in our news media. Mm. So we finally found something for the Air Force to do, and that is to help a bunch of people who weren't taught by the people who were already paying to teach them maths and science. We must now celebrate that the Air Force stepped in and helped. Mm. I'm not going to celebrate this. I think this is a disgraceful.
How much do they know about...
Well, if they're engineers, and they probably know more than the teachers, which is how we've ended up in this situation.
So
teachers are probably
soldiers.
At the Shebeen on strike because their members are sad too. No, and they're in the Air Force and they're probably
they
capable people.
Soldiers.
But they're not teachers.
Yeah. You have to learn how to be a teacher.
Everybody's going to go, well, this is great, the Air Force stepping in to help. That's not the story. The story is this is an indictment on the education department.
Yeah, also you have a curriculum to stick to.
Jesus.
Imagine someone, some, you know, well-read engineer now going off on a tangent of something that he does. No, you need to stick to the syllabus.
And here's the dark side of this. In true military tradition, this is, again, according to the Sunday Times, pupils were woken at 5 a.m. to start classes at 6 a.m. Between lessons, they had to do physical exercise and participate in drills. Taught about patriotism. This sounds extraordinarily totalitarian to me.
No, this does not sound
like the kind of country.
I was relatively open-minded with that.
These are kids and teenagers who need a lot of sleep, so you're going to tire them out.
Yeah,
if you do that
don't wake
them.
Me up at
And they probably only I guarantee you that the improvement in their marks is only as a response to actual discipline in their lives. And that's good, but the fact that it has to be at the cost of the taxpayer and that our military has to be the one to do this just shows you how parents have utterly failed in this country. And then drought-stricken Northern Cape has been declared a disaster area. Don't know how it's taken so long, but the Northern Cape Premier Zamani Saul has declared the drought-stricken province a disaster area. Of course, when you declare a place a disaster area, certain things come into play. Water and Sanitation Department has set aside $300 million towards drought relief for the province. Premier spokesperson said that the funds would be distributed as soon as possible. There's a plan for the rollout of funds for farmers. We will check and oversee the trust. The Northern Cape is now the second province to be declared a drought disaster area after the Eastern Cape. And then finally, our last story for the day before we get to Anthea is from the BBC. You know, sometimes the BBC reports some interesting things. Apparently, retired Pope Benedict has warned Francis against relaxing priestly celibacy rules. There's this movie called The Two Popes, which is out now. Which
on Netflix.
Quite keen to see because it's got Anthony Hopkins. And who's the other dude? He looks just like Pope Francis. Hello, Anthony. You watched it?
Good morning.
I'm like sitting on the Googler.
Yes, it's excellent.
Who paid for it? The Vatican?
No. It's listen.
Hollywood movie.
Anthony.
Jonathan Pryce. He plays Pope Francis.
It's a Netflix movie. And Pope Benedict has apparently co-authored a book with Cardinal Robert Sarah, and it comes in the response of a proposal to allow married men to be ordained as priests in the Amazon region. And Pope Benedict, who retired in 2013, said he couldn't remain silent on the issue. In the book, he says celibacy, a centuries-old tradition within the church, has a great significance because it allows priests to focus on their duties. The 92-year-old says it doesn't seem possible to realize both vocations simultaneously, being a parent and priesthood. It is rare for Pope Benedict, who is the first pontiff to resign in almost 600 years, to intervene in clerical matters. So this is probably only news because people have been watching The Two Popes.
Exactly.
And you know what makes him a dickhead is that he can't mention that pedophilia and priesthood are possible together. So please,
exactly.
Do me a favor.
Good
just
point.
Age and go.
There it is.
Good point. Got to deal with that
also,
first.
We're terrible. Also talking about it probably because of Pope Francis slapping people down.
Yes.
So keeps funny. On slapping people.
Have you
hands.
Seen that? These people grab him to touch him while he's walking around, and you know the Pope always does these little walkabouts where he meets people and shakes their hand. And
yeah. They think they'll be blessed for life if they touch the Pope.
So they grab his hand or his clothes while he's walking away. And he's like, he turns around and says to them, no, you don't. I mean, I'd punch him in the fucking face if I was Pope.
And that's why you are not the Pope. Yeah, you can't do that.
But also because it was a woman, there was a huge outcry that he'd slapped her. But also, again, the title says the Pope slapped a woman. You immediately think he slapped her through the face, but he slapped away her hand.
Yeah.
Because it's a woman, there's a whole thing about it. He had to apologize.
That's the annoying part. He shouldn't have apologized.
He should not have apologized.
Don't grab my hand.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Here she is, Anthea, with the money shot. Got to have your music first.
Sure.
What's happening in the money
Good morning. I am very glad to report that World War III seems to be over.
Yes, but I told you it wasn't a thing.
You did.
I did tell you this would not escalate.
I will be listening.
All those people in the media again. Oh, my God, it's definitely World War III.
And the markets and the traders reacting and oil spiking and gold spiking and equities falling and bonds rising. Yes, yes, yes. Right. So oil is now back to $65 a barrel and gold is trading at $1,555 an ounce, which is pretty much the same level it was trading on the 5th of January. So panic over, let's move on, it says, apparently. We're kind of back. We had a decent week. We had a positive week last week. We're not back in full swing yet. We did have some interesting same macro data last week. So the market PMI, which shows business activity index, fell to 47.6 from 48.6 in November. So that's December's number. And really they're saying that's because Eskom resumed their blackouts in December. So just a reminder on that number, it's an index between 0 and 100. 50 is neutral, above 50 is expansionary, and below 50 is contracting.
Okay.
And so December was 47.6. And then there was a slight improvement in business confidence in December to 93.1 from 92.7. But overall, for 2019, the full number is worse than, is the worst number since 1985. So business confidence really struggling. CEOs just not believing in an economic recovery at this stage. And, you know, it's coming home because somebody asked me, or my clients often ask me these questions, and said, what do the Eskom blackouts really mean? And I think last week was the first tangible sign when the World Bank, being the first key institution, cut our economic forecast to below 1% for this year, 2020. It now expects GDP growth for 2020 to be 0.9%, and they're citing electricity supply concerns as the big issue. I think on top of electricity supply concerns, we also are worried as South Africans and those of us who watch the economy, that the global economy is kind of stalling, you know, it's in late phase cycle. And so we're probably not going to see as much demand coming for our exports coming from global markets. And then the World Bank is saying that last year's GDP growth, obviously we don't have it yet because we're waiting for the December number, but they're thinking, or they're guesstimating, that it's going to be 0.4%, which is horrible. But of course we knew this because we were watching it. And then next year, 2021, they're looking for 1.4%. I'm always intrigued at these numbers in these forecasts because they're always positive, and yet for the last, I don't know how many years, they've been declining. So kind of how badly wrong can you get?
That's scary.
Mm. And then in very little company news, Edcon finally shut its two-floor store in Rosebank Mall.
Oh, shit. This is not great.
Well, terrible for Hyprop, who are their landlords, because Edcon took up, or Edgar's actually, not Edcon, Edgar's in Rosebank Mall took up 5,971 square meters. And I say Edgar's particularly because what they've said is they're actually still, they've still got the other stores, they've still got Jet. I'm not sure they've got a CNA in Rosebank anymore. I can't remember this. But they've still got, you know, the other stores. Edgar's Home, I think, is still there as well. And then Ed kind of said they will continue to close or reduce the size of underperforming stores because that was the reason they gave for closing the store. Some of the space has already been taken up by Crazy Plastics and Ackermans. Hyprop, it's a difficult one for landlords, you know, because they need to fill their stores or they let their space. And Hyprop at the moment have 9,600 square meters of vacant space in its retail
malls. There's a huge crisis with retail space at the moment. And a lot of it's got to do with online shopping becoming more and more available and in demand. But walk around shopping centres now, there are plenty of empty shops. Wow.
Absolutely. And combine that with a slowing economy, right?
Like yeah, of course.
Between the two, you, like having a retail store and paying huge amounts of rent almost makes no sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
The changing face of retail. And then the market's worst kept secret. Absa finally made its official announcement last week that the previous deputy governor of the Reserve Bank, Daniel Manele, will take up the position of CEO on Wednesday, the 15th.
Yeah, and we've actually had him on the show before. I know you know him. That's a tough job to head up.
Absa.
It's a very complex organization. There are a lot of moving parts. He comes from the Reserve Bank, widely regarded as being one of the most competent people in the Reserve Bank. But this is a hard job.
It's a tough job. Yeah. He's got his work cut out for him. Can I just weigh in on like a personal comment? Because you mentioned that I do know Daniel, and I do. And I was so annoyed last week, and this is just my personal comment because it's Monday and I can have a go. Are you ready?
Here we go.
I was so annoyed. I saw a headline that said, Absa appoints first black CEO. Now, this is the problem with BEE. Because Daniel, sure, he's black, but the thing is, he's so much more. So why give him an adjective?
Yes, but this is how the identitarians on the left see everything.
What do you call them?
Identitarians. It's
the name for everything, hey?
There are a bunch of people who think that it is more important. Like, for example, if let's say a woman does something really incredible and she achieves an extraordinary thing. First thing they say is, first woman to do X, Y, and Z. As if all the other women up to then were useless, which is, first of all, very insulting to all the other women in that profession or in that field who've been working hard to make it possible for people at this stage to do the things that they're doing that are record-breaking. But second of all, that you only see her as a woman is very telling about what kind of a person you might be. If you only see him as the first black CEO of Absa, you pay no attention to the rest of his CV. You have no interest in whether or not he was a man of significant substance and gravity at the Reserve Bank. It shows me that you're actually deep down the kind of person who's only interested in making a big headline, making it about that person's race, gender, their sexual preferences, or whatever else it is. It means you're a very, very insubstantial, shallow person.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. You agree with me then.
I totally agree with you.
It really annoyed me, actually. And I get that we need black and female role models in top positions in South African companies.
If you can't see that at the moment, I mean, there's all over the world. There are amazingly successful women, amazingly successful black people. I mean, we talk about Serena Williams, who's in the news this morning, and maybe Mbulela will refer to her first win since 2017. But she's back with a vengeance. Don't tell me there aren't people for young black girls. And who are all these people who are so worried about what young black girls imagine? Who are these people who are taking everything so seriously for, I just want a young, trans, wheelchair-ridden Indian girl to know that she can make it because a young, trans, Indian girl is in a wheelchair and is president of the United States. You really think kids are that dumb? They can't see themselves, they can't envision a future for themselves just because they don't see someone who looks like them? Dummies.
So I can't remember who said it, but I read it in Sheryl Sandberg's book. And it said, the noun goes to the strong and the adjective to the weak. So if you're a CEO, you're a CEO, but Daniel Manele is a black CEO, so he gets an adjective.
Right.
Is it not time to stop that?
Deeply patronizing.
No, was there nothing else on his CV that they could have highlighted?
Oh, boy, yeah.
The noun
can go on and on about
strong.
Exactly. Yeah.
I like that very much. Sheryl Sandberg, first time she said something useful since
we didn't have
Cambridge Analytica.
she quoted someone.
I'm sure she didn't say it originally, but good that she found that, because it's a good sentence. I like that.
So Daniel
was fine, okay.
So Daniel's a CEO, is he?
He's the CEO, and I mean, so he really has his work cut out for him. He's up against the newer entrants, Time, Discovery, Bank Zero, not to mention Capitec, that have been stealing business from Absa for the last couple of years. And then on the key fundamental metrics, at the last reporting, which was, I think, their half year, earnings grew by 3%, which was shocking. Like, it's so insipid. You know, compared to, even in this difficult environment, people like F&B and Standard Bank are growing in double digit earnings growth, seeing double digit. And then their return on equity, which I think is the big one, right? And I always talk about F&B because they somehow every year manage to get above 20%. Absa decreased to 16.4%. From 17.1 the previous reporting year. So he's got his work cut out for him.
Right.
And then another company in the news last week was Sibanye-Stillwater. They announced that they're exercising their option to increase their stake in DRD Gold from 38% to just above 50%, so 50.1% in fact. And they have said that, not to worry, DRD Gold will remain listed on the JSE because at this stage, as a majority shareholder, they could probably delist. And there are costs involved with being listed on the JSE. So interesting that they said that. I think they're just trying to keep shareholders happy. It's relatively small deal for Sibanye. It's a 1.1 billion rand deal, and Sibanye's market cap is 94 billion rand, so, you know, tiny 1.5%. I tell you what, it looks like, at this stage, quite a nice speculative trade. And I say speculative because in the last week alone, we've seen gold go from 1,000, I think it was 400, to 1,600 and something, and then back again. So those volatile markets. And then the other exciting news is that the Dow Jones, briefly, an intraday trade for the first time hit 29,000 level on Friday. And then it kind of pulled back after they got the unemployment numbers. The U.S. created
record numbers. Record numbers on the stock market.
Indeed. Yeah. They created 145,000 jobs in December. They were expecting 160,000. So, of course, the market came off. Still creating jobs, though.
All right, well, there's good news and there's interesting news and there's a little bit more dodgy news from an EdCon point of view, but otherwise, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Cheers.
Anthea, there's the money shot for Monday morning. So, Mbulelo, what have you got for us today?
Today I have got for you, Gareth. You know, what do we always hear about South Africa? We're going to get into our bunch of winners, which we're going to do.
All right, let's. Do you want to start with that, or do you want to give us some sport?
What do you guys want to hear? Some sport?
Well, some sport feels like it's probably appropriate after the weekend. Bring it on.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, we're now talking. We're going to go to Australia, right? Gareth, people are dying. Animals are dying. No worries. Let's play some tennis.
Yes, but it is the Australian Open. It does happen indeed at this time every year. It's not the animals' fault. It's not the fire's fault that the Australian Open needs to happen. So let's go.
Yeah, let's play. Let's play. We'll be all right. We're going to go ahead with it. And, you know, it's a dry run of the rapture. But anyway, don't let that stop short skirts and rackets from swinging. And it's an awesome competition, right? It always starts off the year.
It opens the year for tennis.
It does. So most stars move there just after Christmas. They'll set up and they'll either play in Auckland, which Serena's just won. You mentioned that a little bit earlier. So it's her first win in forever. Since 2017, it's her first real big win. So she's coming into Australia with a bit of form for the first time and no injury for the first time. So generally when Serena wins before Aussie Open, she's going to power everyone away. But the main headline, Gareth, it's probably going to be the last time we see the great big three. And
what is that?
I'm referring to Novak, Rafa, and of course the great Roger Federer.
Okay.
At the very peak, competing against one another. Just to put in perspective how great these three have been. Since 2004, right, we've had 64 Grand Slams. Mm-hmm. Only 10 have been won by people not called Novak Djokovic, Rafa, or Roger Federer. In 64 majors. That is unbelievable.
Only how many?
Only 10 of the last 64 haven't been won by those three.
Wow. Yeah, they really have dominated the game. So why are we not going to see the three of them again?
Not at this level. So Rogers, we saw last year he didn't win any. He's basically like 750 by sports age. He's in he's moving into his late 30s, and now Novak's coming through, right? So this is the last year. So that, for me, that's the headline. Australia, we're very, very lucky. This is very rare in any sport, in any field, actually, in any business, to see three titans all alive at the same time at their peak. So we've really, really been spoiled. And of course, if Rafa wins, he joins Roger Federer on 20 titles. And then we really start to argue about who's the greatest tennis player of all time. Novak, of course, on 16 titles. My prediction for the Aussie Open this year, the ladies, Serena, and then, of course, in the men's, I think Novak, he's unbelievable. He'll be defending champion, and he's looking fit again.
Okay.
So that's my prediction for the Aussie Open. Now, VAR, if you watch football, right, Gareth, is the worst thing to happen to football.
This is the video referee, the TV referee.
Exactly, video assistant referee. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you something. It is the worst thing to happen to football since Megan Rapinoe. And if you don't know who that is...
No, who is that?
She's that horrible American football captain lady with the colorful hair, who's a social justice warrior.
And oh, she's the worst thing that's happened
to
football?
She's like Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
For sport.
For the lesbians and ladies sport. Well, that's what she is. She's awful. She's made it unbearable. But VAR is comparable to this to all those of us. If you'd watch the West Ham game, they got denied the most ludicrous goal. So Gareth, there's a handball in football, right?
Yes, of course.
But like this guy basically kicked the ball into the guy's arm from like half a meter away. And the worst part is they scored from this incident. But it's innocuous. They've turned that goal
basically
over.
Basically, his arm was in the way.
No, it was ridiculous. Okay. It's called ball to hand. Anybody who's been watching football. So VAR has to go. It's absolutely ridiculous. But if you want to watch a hilarious video, his name's Declan Rice. Go and watch it on YouTube. It's absolutely hilarious. He's doing what they call in London, he loses his rag. Gareth, I'm sure you heard that term. And I'll tell you the problem with VAR. It's the inconsistency. So on the weekend, we saw another incident. Arsenal, if you're an Arsenal fan, you saw Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, your captain, get sent off for a horror show tackle. And then in the Liverpool game, Andy Robertson literally nearly broke the guy's leg for the same tackle. He got no card. So, football fans are up in arms. And you know what? VAR is like, I would say, it's like pineapple on pizza, Gareth. Nobody likes it, but bad things happen on earth. And unfortunately,
this is one of them.
You can't sentence people to death for both.
Well, I'm going to just throw in the advisory that tomorrow we will begin our bunch of winners. But it is 2020, and we are tired of mediocre South Africans, right?
Yeah, we're tired. Tired.
Bulela wants to tell us a few good stories, and he wants to tell us about the people that we can aspire to, aspirational figures, and we'll be talking about genuinely world-class humans that South Africa has produced, which I think will make us feel a little bit better. And we'll start with the only human to have traversed both the Great Wall of China, both ways on foot, and he's a five-star chef who's been invited to cook with the likes of Chef Nobu, the famous Chef Nobu. So this is interesting. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to him soon in studio. But tomorrow, Bulela will share with us the story of this incredible human being in our bunch of winners, which starts tomorrow. Very, very exciting. Okay. Lots of other good stuff to come. We've got some news. Got to tell you about the four-day work week. And Gwyneth Paltrow has got new vagina-smelling candles for those people who want some.
Shoo-wee.
It's coming up next. All of that and more. So exciting.
CliffCentral.com